So I think we're going to go to more of an interactive session here, which should be a lot more fun than just listening to me. One question that came up, and I'll see if I can give some thoughts and answers. One thing I mentioned, there's this consortium of economic countries, 19 economic countries. I think I said 1992. It might have actually been more recent than that we were number 16. But about 2 years ago, the last report came out looking at preventable deaths, and we were number 19 out of 19. And one question is, what are some of the characteristics of the countries that are 1, 2, and 3, maybe even 16, 17, and 18, that distinguish those countries from the United States? Yes?
The gap between the incomes is not so wide.
Okay, so one potential characteristic would be more parity, more economic parity within those countries. Others?
I guess the two of them have to be access to healthcare.
Well, that's a big one. So access to healthcare, and if you look at so most of those countries, particularly near the top, tend to have universal care systems in place. And yes,
prevention.
And so they have a healthcare system that has a focus on prevention and helps to pay for prevention. So for much of our healthcare system, other
more of a social safety net.
More of a social safety net.
I was going to say maybe more of a focus on personal freedoms versus what's good for the community.
Okay. Any others? So I think those are probably some very key components, and I think so it's hard to say which one, and I'd have to go back and maybe what might be an interesting project for a graduate student would be to look at those countries and look at some of those different dimensions and sort of give a scoring or rating and see how that rating then applies to somebody being very high in that score for preventable deaths versus not being so high. I think we all have our impressions here. Clearly, access to care is very important, and people not having access to care. And then even for most of the healthcare systems we have here, people have private insurance, Medicare. There are very few items for prevention which are covered. Private insurances can have a little more flexibility, but if you look at Medicare, which is sort of the standard, it was essentially by design not to cover anything for prevention. And then over the last few years, they were able to cover certain preventive services such as mammography screening and maybe prostate-specific antigen and one or two other things. But in general, prevention is not paid for. The system is designed. It says we're not paying for prevention. We're paying for addressing diseases. So we have a focus, a mentality that's focused on disease rather than wellness. And I think that may have some contribution to it as well. And we have a phobia of having quote-unquote socialized medicine. And during the election, everybody heard the election stuff and, oh, we have socialized medicine. We're becoming a socialist country. And the safety net is not socialized medicine. Now, if somebody needed to dial 911 because someone came in here and was waving a knife around, the police would come. We have a system where police provide support for everybody in the country. No one says we're a socialist country because we have police. And if you want bodyguards, if you feel you need extra bodyguards and you have money, you can hire extra bodyguards. So if we did this, and if there's a fire, you can actually call the fire station. They're not going to call and see, do you have fire insurance? And make a decision whether or not they come. They come. So that's a social system. Fire safety is provided for Americans. A certain amount of safety is provided for Americans. So to say that we might consider a certain level of health being provided for Americans does not make you a socialist. Now, if you want to have extra police care, you can pay for it. If you want to have extra health care, you can pay for that too. But having a certain baseline is something that is something we might want to think about if we want to do things differently in this country.
Is Japan the number one country?
Actually, France was the number one country. Which probably really makes, you know.
It's an insult.
It's right. You're talking about, you know, France and America. And they're over there, you know, all the pastries and creams and everything and the food, et cetera, et cetera. And yet they're number one in preventable deaths. That's in preventable deaths. Japan may be number one in longevity. I'm not sure about that. But for preventable deaths. And that's because those systems are able to better provide preventive services or early intervention and focus on those other dimensions of a community for wellness. So that was one question. Are there other questions? I know there are other questions. Answers? Yes.
How would you suggest that a community, what do you say, you go find a researcher and say, hey, I've got this idea about this problem in the community. How do these two things get together?
Excellent question. So the question is, how do we get, so people have ideas, how do you get connected to a researcher and then, you know, from there go on to create, to work on a problem? So one of the first things to do is ask around. So you have an idea, ask other people who maybe, who are involved in that particular area. So let's say it's mental health. So you might ask other people who are in other community organizations, and they say, oh yeah, I've done some, you know, ask them, do they know of a researcher who might be interested in doing, so who's done some work in community, or they think would be interested in doing work in the community. Because that's extremely, it's easier to start out with somebody who you sort of know is passionate about it, and they've done it, and you know that they have a respect for community and they're aware about working community, what it means to their academic career. They've sort of traversed those barriers, and that's very helpful. Some people say, oh, a friend of mine, their wife's or their husband's a researcher. Ask them. Everybody who does research should not be working in the community. Okay. Everybody who does research should not be working in the community. Everybody who does research should not be working in the community. So we said that there's a reason why people became really excited and really good at doing research and working with cells, data sets, mice, whatever it is, because they like that. They're good at that. They're probably not. They may not be the person to be partnering with different community-based organizations. And matter of fact, it could actually set relations back. Okay, so you don't want that. You be careful about it. And part of that happens on the other side. There, you know, for people who are, for researchers, who, same thing, you want to ask individuals you've worked with and work, you know, and know in the community who you might partner with around a certain project. Because you may sort of say, oh, there's such and such. I see them all the time. They're really visible. And when I say is, for partnerships to work, you want people who are both passionate about what they do, but also respectful for the other side. And so you have certain people, just like you have certain researchers who have their own quirks and are very arrogant and condescending. You have community members who are, I would consider, not community advocates, but community activists. It's a completely different type of person to work with. That's the researcher side. That's the researcher on the community side. Very well-intentioned, but they know it all, and it can only work their way. So, again, not the personality for a partnership. A great person to advocate for certain issues. Really important, but not the person for a partnership. And that type of person will also set back relations between sort of community organizations and institutions. So I think the strategy is ask around, and as you ask around, certain names will come up sort of consistently. And as those names come up sort of consistently, that says, okay, that's probably a good place to start with that, you know, because that name seems to resonate with a lot of people on either side. And that's sort of the mover and shaker at the university or in the community for really getting these projects together, or someone's going to know who you should meet with and talk with and get that up and going. Yes?
I wanted to add to your answer to this,
sure,
this question. One, if you have students in your community who are coming to MSU or some other nearby institution, ask them, because they will give you their honest opinion of the faculty, and they'll know who's really student-oriented, and that's always helpful. And the other thing is, we've found that the older faculty members who aren't under a lot of pressure to get out publications right away, so they can work at the community pace, it's easier for them to collaborate with us than younger people who are still facing tenure.
It's a very important point. So a lot of times, community groups, health groups, and organizations may not understand a lot of the pressures and demands that some of the faculty have. And so some of the junior faculty who are trying to get tenure, to get to a position where there's sort of job security, part of that process usually involves doing a certain amount of research and publishing a certain amount of papers. And many community projects, you spend a certain amount of time, first you get to know somebody, and so things seem pretty good, now working on a project and working on design, and now we have to go to the institutional review board, and it's a year and a half, it's 2 years, and the department chair says, it's time for your review, what have you produced? I've created these fantastic collaborations. Incredible. No one at the university has ever done anything like this. We're working on this project, working on a project. That's really great. How many papers have you published? Well, we haven't published any papers yet. We're just getting started. Well, I don't know if you can really stay here much longer. And then what happens is that person may say, wow, I guess I got to go away from this project. And then that project that was really sort of up and going, it can die. So a lot of times it is important to think about what person can do it. And as was mentioned earlier, some of the people who are more senior actually have the time to do it. Well, I'm going to say have the time. Yeah, they are not in this, they already have tenure. So they're not under the same pressure and demands to produce this particular product here. They can actually say, I've done that. What I want to do now is help develop these partnerships and get things going. And then once they're doing that, it's up and going, then hopefully we can bring more students into the project, we can bring junior faculty into the project, we can bring other community organizations into the project, and then the project can grow and prosper. But that's a very important point. Usually, it has to be a more senior faculty. I know one junior faculty member. He's involved in community research. He told me something's interested in. He doesn't think he'll get tenure. He said he knew that when he started. I mean, when he first started, he said, you know, I'm probably not going to get tenure doing this, but this is what I want to do. And I don't care about getting a tenure. And so he's doing. And he's probably not going to get tenure. But he's doing a good job. But more and more institutions, because more and more institutions are seeing the importance of this work, there's a slow push to try to recognize that activity as an important academic contribution that can be counted toward an individual's professional growth and hopefully the tenure track. That being said, it's still not going to be, there's still going to be a need for publications, and there are strategies in which faculty can do both. And it's just important, again, that there's senior faculty working with those junior faculty to give them the ideas, the support, and help them to get both of those accomplished. One other thing that I think for those collaborations and those activities can bring, and we try to encourage, some of the faculty who do basic research and they're teaching, they're working with students, there are opportunities for them to, a lot of people want to know more about stem cell research, more about nanoscience. What is this nanoscience? What is stem cell research? What's all this new stuff with that people are talking about genetics? And so there are opportunities in forums like these to have researchers who do more basic research actually come and sort of inform the lay community what these types of research activities can do, how it happens, what the potential is there, why is stem cell research so talked about, and what are the ups and downs, and then there's different types of stem cell research. So there's lots of issues around embryonic research and people's beliefs around what could or shouldn't happen with an embryo. But there's lots of other stem cell research with non-embryonic cells, with adult cells. And so there's lots of stem cell research that has nothing to do with crossing the boundaries of different personal or religious beliefs. And so hopefully as these collaborations expand, it creates an environment that becomes in a setting where it's very easy to then bring in other scientists to talk to community members. And hopefully bring community members in to talk to other scientists. So one thing we've started, when the process starts, I have weekly meetings now with a group. So my main partner in community said, we should have a community faculty track. We should have community faculty. And so we started a community faculty track. So we have a division for community health that we started, and we have community engagement, division of community engagement. And now we started a community faculty track. So we have about 12, 15 different community members who've been active in different areas of engagement, either directly related to health or tangentially related to health. So some people may be involved in aspects around social justice or criminal justice. They might be involved in housing. But the goal of our community faculty track is to give community members who have different expertise in areas of the community that our faculty should be aware of, to be, and our students should be aware of. So if the next generation of physicians are going to be able to make a bigger difference in taking care of patients so that they do more than just write a prescription, but they understand the social dimensions of a community and they can participate or be a resource, then they can make a much bigger impact than just writing that prescription. For them to know that, they have to understand different aspects around the educational systems in the community, many of the social systems in the community, the support systems, the social welfare systems, the housing systems, the safety systems. Who better to teach the students that than those members of the community who run those operations? They are much better trained than any of our faculty about that. Our faculty are good if they know that that's something they should know about. Not that they would know it, but they should just know that they need to know about it. That would be good. So the community faculty track adds to our faculty and expertise around the community that our traditional faculty cannot provide to our students. And it also adds a dimension of peers that can help educate our faculty so they have a more fuller understanding of community as a whole and what needs to go into making an individual healthy. So that's something that might, you know, for many institutions that have as part of their mission a more direct role and a more engaged role with their community, that's something that we hope other institutions will think about. So we're putting that together now, and then hopefully we'll try to publish some stuff about it so people can sort of see what it is, how it is we put it together, and what are the things we thought about, looked at, et cetera, et cetera.
Is your community track, community faculty track, is that a tenure track?
Not a tenure track. Well, it's not a tenure track, but we have no tenure track at our institution for anybody.
Okay.
So that's both good and bad. But we will be. So we actually have a working group looking at compensation for our community faculty.
That's within the division?
That's within the division. And we also, my plan is to, at least for partial salary, is to create at least one endowed position for sort of the leader of the community faculty track. So we actually have some funds for that, and we'll just sort of figure out how we'll name that and pick and put it together and everything. But I want to make sure that it gets recognized at a high level. And so having an endowed position at the same level as the other, you know, any of our other endowments would send a message that says, yes, we value this and this is important. Yes.
I was thinking about, during your talk, you were talking about how, I'm not sure if I'm going to say this right, but the people in the community with all of their experience and expertise kind of have a PhD in the community or the curb side.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about, like, that seems to kind of keep those letters going as something that's important. And then I was trying to think about, so what would be the equivalent of you in the community? What would be the language? So a community member would have a PhD in the community. What would you have in the community that would be similar? We just don't have a language for that.
Right, like would I be bachelor's or maybe if I made it up to master's level yet or something?
Or, but we keep using that language
right.
That puts the academy at the top. Right. And so I'm trying to think about, like, if you were to throw away the letters,
like director, associate director, CEO,
something
like
chief. No, I the issue is, And I think that's really important. Now, I will actually bring that back to the team to think about. Because one of the reasons why we have the problems that we have is because we have the letters that we have. And it creates a hierarchy in a way that helps prevent a lot of the interactions from happening in a way that they could or should happen. And if there were a way to have this sort of general interaction happening with the letters being out there somewhere for something else, and I just don't know how to do that. But the important thing, I'll come back to you in one second. The important thing is that question has now come up and people will start thinking about it. And somebody here, one of the students here, should be charged with that as a project.
Yes. I'm just thinking, somebody I knew who did a lot of work for the community defined what the issues were, and then they would invite people in to work with them. And they would just describe it as we work shoulder to shoulder with them. And it was a very flat organizational structure.
So, you know, when I work and do activities and projects in the community, I try to keep away from title as much as possible. I really like bringing PhD to the sidewalk when I talk to academic faculty, because, like it or not, now the other person has a title. You can say whatever you want about title, but they have a title. See, so when someone doesn't have a title, they have one thought about the person, and they have another. When they have a title, they have to at least think about them with the title. And then, because the title may be the same as their title, that really challenges them. But I think it is important that we think about how we can move away from it. But it's, you know, a society with no titles would be socialism. Oh. No, so. But
is that the primary culprit? I mean, I'm thinking it's incredible when you think about the disparity, if I hear what you're saying, between our ability to deal with disease once it's been begun and our dysfunction and inability to prevent it in the first place. Something really fundamental is going on. And is it, you mentioned the way we fund research that filters towards these individuals who, you know, work in this singular mindset, and the other is this somehow this political concept of preventing disease is evil and socialist somehow. What's the real culprit here?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's a combination of all of them. But I think when you have titles and you have a hierarchy, it allows people to think about different groups differently and allows one to have a higher level of indifference to people that are not in whatever group you're in. And it helps to sort of sequester and almost eliminate compassion that people have. And as those factors go out, it becomes a lot easier to then focus on things that people think or so. If I'm a researcher I'm a kidney researcher, and I say, well, with the, you know, there's lots of stuff going on in the world, but I'm going to divide the world into two parts: kidney research and not kidney research. And my goal, I want to put as much stuff and energy into kidney research. Then I tend not to really worry too much about what's going on elsewhere. And unless I happen to be interested in preventing kidney disease, which most kidney researcher, heart researcher, et cetera, you're interested in, there is a disease. Because if there's no kidney disease, then there wouldn't be kidney researchers problem. So I have to figure out, well, we need, you know, the money needs to be in kidney disease. And so I'm going to talk to Congress what to do with the money. So the money has to be in kidney disease. Because I do kidney disease. And I want that money for my research. And my fight becomes with the heart specialists. No, it should be for heart disease. But there's not that many people out there fighting for no disease. Right? So think of all the disease. You see a commercial for cancer and for heart disease and erectile dysfunction, but there are no commercials for let's have no disease. There's no big group. There's not a no disease group out there saying there's not enough money from Congress for no disease. We need more money to make sure there's no disease. Just it's hard to get people. Well, it has been hard to get people excited about that in comparison to a disease. So we just have to think differently about how we push it. Maybe we need to come up with that group. Maybe we just need a fancier name. We probably just need to think about what the name is going to be and what the tagline is going to be. And so, you used to be, but I guess for, it was just say no to drugs. It should be just say no to disease or something. I don't know.
Say yes to health.
Say yes to health.
Yeah. I went online and looked at your name before this talk tonight.
Okay.
And one of the things that I found out is that you're also, so here you are, you're an accomplished physician and doing all this important research, but you're also a postdoctoral candidate in metaphysics, spirituality, and holistic health at the College of Metaphysical Studies and New Age Ministries in Clearwater, Florida. So there's obviously an impetus.
Was that really on the...
That's, I found this on the internet. So it's telling me that you're looking for this other, how do you come up with this disease? Or
absolutely. It's the most fun, most exciting thing. So there's two levels. At an individual level, that's exciting stuff. And then there's the community level. And I think the metaphysics, spirituality, and holistic health cuts across both. And as a researcher, I think the community academic partnerships helps to bring that dimension, helps to bring community into that dimension and bring the dimension of community into academia. Or at least that's my hope. So, yeah, that's... The other stuff is okay, the other medicine stuff, but for me, let me see. Traditionally in medicine and in research, what is important are things we measure. Right? So in research, you study something and you're going to measure something and compare it to something else. And if you can't measure it, so it's not important. And yet, the most important things, I'll put $2 on this, I'm getting big time. The most important things in people's lives right here cannot be measured. So to think that something that can't be measured is not important is sort of crazy. But to also think that those things, as important as they are, do not impact on our health and well-being is equally crazy. So just because we can't measure it traditionally anyway, doesn't mean that it's not important and that it doesn't play a role in our lives. And so that aspect, I think, is, for me, going to be critical to wellness. And so there's sort of the personal level around wellness, and then there's the... Are there services made available to people so that they can get prevention, early treatment services, etc.? But there also needs to be self-responsibility and self-empowerment and self-reliance. And so how do we help to capitalize on that? But how do we sort of understand that? And as a researcher, how do we make the research community and a medical community understand that?
Oh, I was just going to say, one of my professors used to say, with all the funding and the focus in these little pots of cancer, digestive disease, and kidney disease, and she used to call it hardening of the categories instead of looking at this big picture.
So we need to think about that. Because our society, so cancer, if you look at the National Institutes of Health, the different directors of the centers, but during a previous administration, we started the war on cancer. So, we're sort of into wars and stuff like that, and it makes you feel good, an American. What's good to be an American is to say we want to have a war and we're going to win. So we said we have a war on cancer. The head of the cancer center is the only director that does not report to the director of NIH. The cancer director head reports to Congress. So they can check on the war on cancer directly themselves. So we have to generate a war on
disease.
On preventing disease. A war on disease. We need some other, we need to think of a new war that's going to.
Change.
Yeah. War, peace, war. I don't know. You have to think about.
War.
Think of,
war.
War on
so those are some.
Recently, there in a popular magazine, there was a picture of a Japanese man having his waist measured, and it said that anyone in Japan over the age of 40 gets his waist measured, and if it exceeds a standard, he's fined.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see him try that.
That was just implemented last year in Japan.
But they're also enrolled in a
well, I think before you get fined, first you get enrolled in a program, so you have an intervention phase prior to getting fined, I believe. I don't know the details. Yes, very difficult to implement here.
Tell us a little bit about your journal.
So I'm the editor of, there's an international journal that is the official journal of an organization called the International Society of Hypertension in Blacks, and it's called Ethnicity and Disease. And the focus of the journal has really been, so about maybe for 8 or 9 years I've been the editor. And originally it was focused more on cardiovascular disease, but it's now very broadly accepts publications focused on ethnicity and disease. And specifically, I like to support community-based participatory research and community-focused research papers, because part of the problem is a lot of people who are doing really good work, a lot of journals say, well, but that's still not what I'm interested in, and so it's hard to get certain work published. And so part of the strategy for elevating this area of research is to make opportunities available for people to publish in these fields. And so we're starting to see a little more in other journals, but so one thing I focus on in that journal is supporting people who do that. And it's global. I look at projects from around the world, and try to support them to get published. And even when they're poorly written, but I think they're sort of interesting, it may take a while, but I'll work with the investigator, because I reckon, English may not be their first language, and they may not be that familiar with and with doing a lot of medical writing per se. And so I'll try to work. I'll actually work with them to get it into shape that I think is appropriate to be in the peer review literature.
Well, I think our time is about up, so maybe we should thank our guests.
Thank you.